You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, episode number 105. Like comedy, horror has the ability to provoke thought and further the conversation on real social issues in a very powerful way. Jordan Peele.
Broadcasting from a dark, windowless room in Hollywood, when we really should be working on that next draft. It's the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, showing you the craft and business of screenwriting while teaching you how to make your screenplay bulletproof. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to a special edition of the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie's going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heartchart. That's H-A-R-T, chart. Now, guys, you are in for an amazing treat today. I'm so excited about this. This is part one of a three-part series that I am going to be releasing on the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, where the legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Contact, August Rush, and Hook, just to name a few of his films, is going to be interviewing some of the top screenwriters in Hollywood. And first up is Oscar winner Jordan Peele, the writer of Get Out and Us. In this conversation, James and Jordan kind of break down Get Out specifically and how he came up with the story, how he worked the characters, how he developed the entire script. And James starts talking to him about charting the emotional journey of his characters using his story system, the Heart Chart. So without any further ado, please enjoy the conversation between James V. Hart and Jordan Peele.
Thank you, Jordan, for doing this. Not everybody in the audience is going to know the film Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but was this an urban legend, or did this have something to do with the, not the genesis of Get Out, but with, there were comparisons, there were, it was very controversial for its time in terms of race relations?
It did have a good deal to do with how I developed the story. I, you know, the beginning nuggets of this screenplay were really coming from a emotional place, a feeling, and the fear that I wanted to capture in this movie was this fear of being observed. And being observed by a bunch of people who are acting like they're not observing you. And I think I quickly sort of tied that in with race and the feeling of being black in a white space. And I was writing the script. I had several different versions of the story going. And at some point I realized, oh, this is, it's Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. So I think I was operating with a version of it where a girl brings her boyfriend to meet all of her high school friends. And it was a sort of inside joke and all that. And at some point I realized, no, this has got to be a family thing.
And well, it makes it more grown up. It takes it out of the kind of teen, exploitation or horror film. You know,
yes,
it's a very smart move.
And there's a wider sort of variety of people to interact with, and there's also a certain adult relatability to the fear of meeting your potential in-laws for the first time. And I recognize, like, look, you know, I knew this was a tough one, to sell. Cause people, I think people would assume when hearing the premise that there's no way this can be done right. So, you know, looking back at how Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, I think one of the reasons that was able to sort of cross the boundary of racism and become a popular movie was that everyone knows what it feels like to meet your in-laws. And that's universal, even though this particular dynamic is, you know, makes it extreme.
You started, I believe you started the idea for Get Out. Was that always the title? Was Get Out always the title?
No, for a while the working title was Get Out of the House.
Okay. Yeah. Guess Who's Getting Out of the House? Yeah.
Guess Who's Getting Out of the House? Yeah.
There was a different president when you, I believe there was a different president when you first started working on the script or on the idea. Did any of the political changes and shifts from the Obama administration to the Trump administration, did that have any impact on the evolution of the story? I'm not trying to get political. I'm just wondering did your mood change? Did something change inside you or outside you?
Yes. You know, Trump was basically elected between when I shot the movie and when it came out. And so that was in the editing phase. And by the time we were in the phase of picking up some additional photography, Trump was I don't think he had been elected yet. I'm not sure. But the climate was surrounding race was becoming more out in the open. And there was this discussion of Black Lives Matter was happening in a way we hadn't seen. And more specifically, there was a attention being brought to, you know, Black people being murdered by police. And so because the Obama era was just surrounded with this post-racial lie, as I like to call it, all of a sudden I was sort of showing this movie and testing it in a world that was race weary, you know, several months later, but both for good and bad reasons, race weary. But I remember specifically feeling that the original, when I showed the original ending, which was, of course, as you probably know, Chris, it doesn't end well. Chris ends up in prison, and it's meant to be a gut blow, but it's also a downer. It was an extra special downer, and because the state of the world had evolved and these conversations were happening. So that's when I made the decision to give us a happy ending, which I don't know if I would have in the Obama era, firmly in the Obama era, where everyone was, you know, seemed certain that race wasn't a thing anymore.
Well, there's one of the struggle that a writer, these are all writers and they're all interested in the process, and the struggle with beginnings and endings, you know, is what we all wake up at that nightmare, you know. So one of the principles that we'll be discussing today, instead of a happy ending or a sad ending, I refer to it as a satisfying ending. Did you give your audience an ending that they're satisfied with, not that they're pissed off by or feel derailed or cheated by? Is it satisfying? So did you wrestled with this ending? Did you wrestle with it in post, or was it? Did you wrestle with it when you were shooting? How did you find that satisfying ending?
When I wrestled with it in the script phase, and I wrestled with it in post. So in the script phase, as you do, I had many different ways this could go, there were several different endings. Some nobody even knows about, in the script phase, I settled on the gut blow version, you know, hey, you know, you might only get to do this once, boom, hit them with it and rip the fun out from under them. You know, they've already given me their money, sort of thing.
Well, it is.
You know, as we got closer, and I
no, go ahead.
Well, yeah, as we got closer to the, the launch, and I really realized this is really happening, and I'd done so much work to serve the audience, and I think that's just where I come from as a filmmaker. I think the other version, the badass, I don't care what you think of my film, I made my film thing is not really me. I come from comedy, you know? So I, in my soul, the one guy that's not laughing is my failure.
Yeah.
So I went with in the last hour, I felt very content with the decision that we have to give him a hero. And more importantly, the moment the car comes up, the cop car rolls up and the audience goes,
your guy, yeah.
That moment achieves my point.
Yeah.
Right. No matter how much farther I take it, they've done the work. I don't need to make a point. They've made the point. So it's even more subversive and more elegant to let that be and then give us our fun win as well.
Well, that paranoia still creeps up on everybody. I don't care what your ethnic background is. When that cop car shows up, you're going, fuck. No.
Right.
It's antler guy. Yeah. It's deer hunter cop. You know, it's the antler guy on the road. You mentioned something that I'm a big proponent of in the work that we do with structure is audience. You talked about you're an audience guy. And a lot of filmmakers and a lot of writers don't ever have the audience present in their process. And I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but so they're not just hearing it from me. Could you talk about the audience a little bit when you're writing and when you're thinking do you bring them with you? What's your connection to the audience in this process?
Because I've been on stage a lot and I've done a lot of comedy, live comedy, I think I do have a nice little extra voice of the audience in my head. I'm always with comedy. You're always thinking about the audience because you're always trying to subvert their expectations, so that they don't get ahead of you and say, okay, you're dumb, or, you know, this is dumb, or this is trying to speak to somebody who's less intelligent than I am. As far as I'm concerned, the audience that, you know, there's no movie without the audience. It doesn't exist if someone's not seeing it for the first time or whatever. So anything less than trying to get every single member of the audience is kind of lazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
You have to assume there is a way to get what you want as an artist and to give the audience what they want.
Well, I guess ultimately they decide whether you're a success or not. Doesn't matter how hard you worked or how many years you slaved over.
The stakes are you're going to be often your ability to do it again or do another one or do one. So that's pretty important.
I appreciate that. Two last questions real quickly. You said that this is a movie you have to see more than once. What is it that people miss what is it that we mostly miss in that first viewing that when we go back a second time, we go, oh, I mean, I'm not sure. It'd be interesting to hear your view on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, certainly any movie with a reveal or a twist, you can watch again and with a new perspective on what you saw the first time pre-twist. A movie that kind of honors that second viewing and the first really is a movie where the clues were there.
Yeah.
If you you missed them. I think that's the most satisfying thing as an audience, to feel like I wasn't treated like I'm a dum-dum, but because I'm not, and I almost got it, but I didn't. And he then went, you can see the proof that he was given, he was laying out the breadcrumbs for me.
The opening is, I had to watch it twice to go, oh, that's the guy.
You know, that's Lil Keith Stanfield. Yeah. That's kidnapped in the beginning. Yeah. That's what I think. You know, I put a lot of detail to make sure that second viewing it worked, and there's these layers. I mean, a big thread to follow, of course, is Rose. And, now what we know from Rose, you know, the first moment we see her, she's, you know, having a moment she's selecting a pastry with that weird little smile on her face. That first time you watch it is just the sweetest ingenue you could imagine. And it has a completely different, sinister take the next time. So there's many of her actions that mean something different going through. And my favorite, of course, is the thread with the grandfather and the grandmother, Walter and George, and idea that grandpa had lost to Jesse Owens.
Yeah. And she can run fast.
He's always chasing that. You know, he built this mythology that it was there was a racial reason he didn't win. That this whole thing kind of comes from that. That's why, of course, we see Walter running.
Well, that's what's diabolical about the ending. I mean, I specifically have not charted the ending until today when we do this live with our group, because the ending is diabolical. The roller coaster ride you take us on, and the ups and downs, and it's like, whoa, one reveal after another. That's what I mean. It's a very satisfying ending. All of your conflicts, all the threads you pulled together in a very satisifying ending. And she creeps me out. She creeps me out. Betty. Oh, yeah. Betty's incredible. I forgot her name, but
Betty Gabriel, who plays Georgina. Yes.
Incredible. Georgine. Incredible.
Allison Williams is, the fact that she can do both sides of that performance just shows you how good a liar she is, really.
Yeah, it's amazing. The same smile when I have got the keys that she has at the pastry store. The same smile. So last question.
Okay.
Is there going to be a Get Outer?
As the farther I move from it, I don't think so. Never say never. I'll tell you this. I would never do it as like a money grab. I would only do it because I've got the story to make the Get Out universe that much sweeter. And, you know, I got some ideas, but right now I don't have it. And I love making new worlds.
Well, we really appreciate your taking the time to talk to us today. And I know everybody behind me and around me, I'm giving my best Bradley Whitford, in case you hadn't noticed, is about to hopefully enjoy this next hour and a half. And we certainly have enjoyed your film and look forward to the next adventure that you bring us. And
thank you. It's called Us, and it comes out March 15th, 19th. So it's coming up. I'm editing it right now. It's good.
Are we going to laugh more on this one?
You know what? I'll tell you what. You will laugh. You will be scared. Much like Get Out, there will be a range.
Well, coming from you, we'll take it as gospel and not to expect anything less. So here's your little tribute.
Oh my God.
We're all clicking our teacups.
I'm actually in the
chair.
The chair right now. This is Missy's chair.
I love it. I love it. So perfect. Satisfying ending.
I want to thank James and Jordan for that amazing conversation. And if you want to get access to James V. Hart's masterclass over on IFH Academy, just head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Like I said before, this is a three-part series. So part two, James will be talking to another Oscar-winning screenwriter, which is going to blow your minds. I cannot wait to get those out for you. So keep an eye out for that. They're going to be mixed in with our regular scheduled programming, but keep an eye out for that. Thank you so much for listening, guys. As always, keep on writing, no matter what. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv.